Hello, you're listening to The Alternative Show, and our special guest today is John Potter, who is the director of the arts charity company Paradiso. Hello, John.
Hello.
Thanks very much for coming in today. So you've got a lot of interesting things to talk about. Shall we start with your company? Can you explain a little bit what that does?
Yes. Well, it's a charity that works with vulnerable and disadvantaged people, has been doing that over the last 5 years, although previous to that it was a theatre company. But our mission now is to enable people to tell their stories, and that runs through all our work. And I think because of that, we've got a relationship now with radio, which is quite strong. We've collaborated with BBC Radio Berkshire for the last 5 years on different projects in different environments, and that's gone very well. And basically, we continue to support people. We listen to people very carefully, and we enable them to tell their stories in sometimes in song form, sometimes in written form, poetry, prose, and performance.
Because you've actually made a CD, haven't you?
Yes, that was from a project about 4 years ago called The Ballads of Reading Jail. We worked doing writing sessions in the jail, and we also worked with some young people outside in the community who were in danger of going into prison or just coming out of it. Reading Jail is a young offender institution, so that's 18 to 21-year-olds. We have a track that comes from that project, which I thought might be very good to share, because I think it really demonstrates this idea that we're working with of people trying to understand their own story and come to terms with that story and the people in that story, good and bad. And for us, when people start to do that, they can move forward sometimes in their lives quite profoundly. This track is called Charlie Finn. It's a song written by Andy when he was in Reading Jail. He was 20 at that time. It began as lines that seemed to be influenced by psalms and by a kind of background in the church, although whether that's true I don't know. It was a really unique and exciting style of writing. The music and the vocals were then done by James Ewers of the band My Luminaries. And just to, one last thing is that we never found out who Charlie Finn was. This was just somebody from Andy's past.
Let's have a listen.
In the darkest hour of the loneliest night, I've seen all the world bust up and fight upon a field of low yield. God knows, hell knows, I see clubs on the street rise to their feet as blood flows. As blood flows. Remember Charlie Finn. Remember Charlie Finn. A soldier nobody. Like warriors of old, you still fight, and it shows just how little we've learned over centuries of hostility. One goes out, one comes in, shrieks come from Charlie Finn, ring out across a world of sin. Remember Charlie Finn. Remember Charlie Finn, a soldier nobody knows. Oh, young Charlie Finn, do not despise. Let man into those bloodshot eyes. Let man see behind those gunshot eyes. See what goes on, sin in the night. Let man in, and you will find yourself in a field of better years. Remember Charlie Finn. Remember Charlie Finn. A soldier, nobody. Charlie Finn. Remember Charlie Finn. A soldier nobody knows.
I was very impressed with the quality of that. So that's the first piece of music he'd ever made.
That's the first piece of music he's ever written. As I say, it began as lines in a writing session, and then of course we got it produced outside the prison because it's not possible to do that inside. So that was sung by the lead singer of a local band in Reading where we were working.
Because a lot of your work is to do with the healing power of self-expression. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, absolutely. Just for the first half of this year, we've been doing a project which became known through the process as the Homeless Hearts Club. And in that case, we were working with young people on the theme of emotional well-being, young people at the foyer in Slough and at the YMCA, young people who were living independently or had spent time on the street, that kind of thing. And we were also working at a place called Serena Hall, which is a drop-in centre for homeless people in Slough, some of whom are young and some not, but who basically go there for their lunches. So in that context, we were wondering, as we went through, whether arts, song, writing would have a place for people whose needs were quite immediate. And I think in some cases it worked very well, and we had some quite profound moments with people, and there seemed to be a lot of potential for change, which really was inspiring to us.
How did you become involved in this kind of charity work?
Well, as I said, we were a touring theatre company for many years, so I've always been interested in writing and in new work. I was never, in a sense, a writer on my own. I always collaborated with others. I was part of groups that devised new work, and we spent a long time touring. But I moved to the Brighton area from Manchester in 1999, and I've now got I've got four children, so all the great things about touring weren't that great anymore. So I was slightly looking for a change of direction, and I really didn't fancy teaching. I'm not really feel that I'm a great teacher, but I was invited by the Arts Council to go on a course for working with young offenders. And about that same time, in 2004, roughly, the Arts Council also invited some theatre companies and arts groups in the South East to meet with radio producers and directors. And those two things combined, and we sort of pitched this idea to Radio Berkshire of material around young offenders and their stories, which developed into the project I've just talked about.
So it's a combination of the arts and your interest in helping people and healing that just combined in this wonderful fusion, really.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I just felt that the material we were getting from young people on the edges of, you know, the law was great material. Better material than I'd had in, you know, many years of trying to make my own work, and it seemed to me that what I'd been doing in theatre, which was about, you know, improvising, working with other people, telling stories, was all in a sense that the same motivations were all there. I was just extending it into another form, and I still feel that loads of the things that, you know, grew into me during the years in theatre still apply today. One of the brilliant things about radio is that you can leave things till the last minute. So right up until, you know, the week that we're putting stuff out on Radio Berkshire, we're still finding stuff, and some of the best stuff is the stuff that comes in right at the end. And the same is true when you're improvising a piece of theatre.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And a lot of the best things happen spontaneously as well, doesn't it? Which you haven't always planned
exactly.
for.
Exactly. They happen spontaneously, so you need to bring people together, you know, bring a presenter together with a you know, in the recent case, with a man who'd been homeless for many years, and a vicar in that case, which worked brilliantly because she'd ended up in he'd ended up in her church, and she'd taken him to the Serena Hall drop-in centre, that kind of thing. And you just hope that combination works. And I remember that in that case it did, because actually Robert, that homeless man, had not seen Louise, the vicar, since that time that she brought him in. And it was brilliant that we're able to go back over that story and bring it alive. So yeah, you bring these things together and you hope that it works.
And for a lot of these people, it's probably the first time they've had the opportunity to do something creative in that way, I would imagine.
Yes, in our mental health work, I think that's come up a number of times. People have said, I've had this story, I have this material for 20 years, and it's great to tell it. You know, it's great that it's now out. I think that's so important. Because we've been working with the professor of psychology recently. We've been talking to him about the process of writing things down, or the process of telling things to other people who are listening carefully and not interrupting you. But that process is something which transforms experience. And believe me, it does put it in a different part of the brain. And once it's in that new part of the brain, having been written down, it is much easier to deal with. If your experience remains in sort of untransformed or unfiltered, kind of, then it can cause you low-level stress. And that low-level stress to do with that experience can continue throughout your life.
That's very interesting. So traumas stay inside you unless they're expressed in some form. Either you need to tell someone, or you need to write about it, or sing about it.
Exactly.
And or dance.
And they've scanned the brain and proved that experience that is then held in a different part of the brain where it's more settled. So unless you are able to, as I say, share your experience with someone who's listening, like a counselling session, or to write it down. And writing it down is just as good as the counselling session. Once you've done that, you settle that experience and you are not caused the same stress by it.
Because I know they've done research which has proven just keeping a journal every day boosts your immune system.
I'm sure it does, yes. And Nick Troop, this professor that I talked about, he's been part of studies that have analysed people's immune function, and they've done, you know, control groups and all this kind of things, and it's proved beyond doubt that writing things down or going through a process of talking does improve immune function. It improves people's ability to, you know, to get jobs again if they've been unemployed, and it improves all kinds of things that they've been able to measure physically as well as emotionally.
I think that's so important for people to know. And certainly in the past, the advice used to be forget about it, wasn't it? And just carry on. and don't think about it as if it's going to magically dissolve by itself.
Yes.
And I think there's still a tendency for people to do that, particularly, I would say, in England, in English culture, and particularly with men.
Yes.
Just to not talk about the problems.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And one of the huge themes that came out of the Ballads of Reading Jail project was dads. And I remember we were in a writing session once in Reading Jail, and we were talking about dads, and this bloke called Peter said about his own dad, he comes and he goes, and he comes and he goes, and he don't come. And that was amazing. It was so lyrical and poetic. And I said, that's, you know, that's got to be part of a poem or a song, and we did in the end convert it into a song, and we can play it. It's Peter, as I say, who was about 19, this again was taken out of the jail and was recorded by a guy called Ben Marwood, who has a band in Reading, and it's called The Day I Got Stuck.
He comes and he goes, and he comes and he goes, but he don't come. And oh, will he stay? Maybe he just might, but the next thing you know, he's on the next flight, and I'm on my bike, and he's on his train. I guess he's on his way back. I guess he's on his way back, coming in from the edge of the track.
Week of feedback there, but a beautiful track preceding it. Again, I'm very impressed with those lyrics. They're very heartfelt, aren't they?
They're very heartfelt, and they're so clear, aren't they? I just I think when people start with the idea of sharing story, and also sometimes when they're writing their first poem ever, which I think Peter was, they've got a lot to say, and I just think it's such high quality when people talk clearly about really important things. And that theme runs throughout our prison system and runs throughout schools as well, you know, the kind of way we want to follow our dads, the way we want, you know, we need models in our lives, and the way if they're not there we can have terrible trouble. And I don't know. It's just so hard. And I wish that we spent more time understanding how hard it is for some people, like Peter, who was in Reading jail, and as he said, just, you know, he just got stuck in traffic and took many wrong decisions and was there. But, you know, if we really understood what that was about and how he'd been so abandoned 4 years, you know, for someone who expected to come back, I wish we'd bring that into our care a bit more.
Yes, because I think one of the big questions is, do these people need punishment or do they need help? And I'm just reminded of a story by A.S. Neil, you know, the founder of Summerhill School, and he said he was present when a boy was being sentenced to prison, and the judge said that if his father had beaten him a little more, then maybe he wouldn't be going to prison. and this was someone that Neil knew, and he said he knew that he was actually beaten by his father every day of his life.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows? I just wish Peter all the best. I really do. And Andy, they're in the prison system. You come across them for a short time. We stay in touch. But in fact, both Peter and Andy were transferred shortly afterwards to other prisons. That's the way of it. You have a tiny little moment with people. But as I say, you know, I do believe in the transformative power of writing, and I just wish them well.
That's all you can do, isn't it, in the short amount of time you have with them? Try and provide techniques, and as you say, you can hear them. Just being heard by itself is healing, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And that's something that Company Paradiso has been working with over the last few years. I think we've stopped using the word help. We've stopped saying we help people. And now we say that our objective is to listen to people. And I think that's really important, to listen carefully to people. And if the time is right to share that story, to sort of bring it out, maybe refine it and put it into some form in a book or a poem or a song, where an audience is quite important, because that's the process of being heard by people, which is also really beneficial. The act of writing things down and ordering that experience, coming to terms with that understanding, that experience, and in some way understanding it a bit more deeper, is what we're about.
And some interesting scientific research has been done about this, hasn't it?
Yes, exactly. I mentioned Nick Troup, but the going a step further back from that, when we were setting up this project recently with homeless people and with young people around emotional well-being, I read a book called The Secret Life of Pronouns by James Pennebaker, who is an American expert on the power of writing. In his terms, he doesn't ever refer to creative writing. For him, it's expressive writing, and it's just writing about experience. But obviously tied in very closely with our work. He's done, you know, he's been pioneering the proving that writing is beneficial for health over the last couple of decades. I emailed him and said, you know, who's doing this kind of thing in Britain? You know, is there anyone that I could get in touch with? He put me in. He was very kind, said, contact this bloke at the University College London in the Department of Psychology there, called John Weinman. And John Weinman said, maybe you should talk to Nick Troup, who's in the University of Hertfordshire, which is what I did. And we've now got this very interesting, very inspiring relationship, because Nick has done a load of research. But he's really enjoyed coming to meet young people in the foyer in Slough, and in a sense applying his work a bit more to sort of individual cases as we do, rather than looking at sort of general collections of people who might be writing.
So they have a computer program which analyses your writing.
They do, exactly. That's James Pennebaker's computer program. It came... Pronouns is one of the things it analyzes. It analyzes the writing in all kinds of groups, and I don't want to sort of try and express it too much because I don't want to do it a disservice, but James Pennebaker is very easy to find on the web. He's got his site at the University of Texas. He's got loads of resources and loads of things you can try out yourself. But basically, just to say that they came across this really interesting fact by accident that pronouns revealed an awful lot about your writing and, in a sense, about your health. Because pronouns are words that we use kind of unconsciously without thinking about them. We take care with our nouns and our adverbs and writing, but pronouns we can't really control. So analysing them with a computer program and looking at how they occur and when they occur and how often and all that kind of stuff brought really interesting results and started to give quite consistent feedback in terms of people's emotional well-being. And of course, once that was happening, you could track how things were changing for people over time. So that was really, really interesting. So the computer program is called LIWC, Linguistic Inquiry and Word Count. So you just put a piece of writing into this computer program and it gives you this feedback, and that's a great tool to analyze people's writing, and it's available to use, and we put some of the writing from our project with young people into it, which was fascinating.
So it's revealing more the subconscious process that's going on inside you, as you say, these pronouns, because people don't think about them so much, so you can actually, you're seeing more at a deeper level what's happening with people's health.
Yes, I mean, there's one example. There was a young man called Ross, and it was what the computer program demonstrated was the change, or the relationship between the use of I and we, and this can give an indication about how socially isolated somebody is. And in Ross's case, he had sent back some emails to his family when he'd been homeless. He'd had a deal of trouble after cannabis use when he was about 16, 17, had been sort of in and out of the family after that, and had ended up in his about 20, I think it was, age 20, going to America to live on the streets. And it's actually at that age, although his family tried to stop him and sectioned him once, they, in a sense, because he had his own passport, he was free to do that, and he did do that. So we were able to analyse his writing at that time, and also a bit of writing when he was just about to come home, and look at the difference between them. And it was really interesting to report back to Ross about the changing use of I and we, because... there was a definite change, and that was great. But I won't go into the detail. But it was really instructive for him in terms of his progression and where he is now. And actually, he's now doing very, very well, and he's sort of resolved a lot of things with his family, and he's very creative, and actually now he's on regular medication and is doing well, and is starting to look at the process of coming off that medication.
And if anyone's interested, they can find that website and put in their own.
James Pennebaker is James W. Pennebaker, PENNEBAKER, and you'll find his site at the University of Texas, and there's loads of resources. He's very generous and very open with his research, and you can try things out.
You have another piece of music you wanted to...
Yes, I do. This is to do with a project that we're running now in Sussex. It started already, but it'll be running till the end of the year. And it's around writing by people who've been supported by mental health services in this area. It was something that we did 2 years ago, and we're now coming back to that material. 2 years ago, there was a performance, a comedy performance at the Brighton Comedy Festival called Warning May Contain Nuts, which we really weren't quite sure about, because in a sense we weren't presenting stand-up comedy, we were presenting bits of poem, prose. John Hegley took part, which was fantastic, but the idea was to present poem much in the way that John Hegley does in a comedy evening, rather than stand-up, rather than jokes. It was much more about this thing, again, of story, of sharing something. So we weren't sure how it would fit into a comedy festival, but I think it worked great. One reason was that the audience were amazing and really celebrated loads of different kinds of contributions from loads of people. So it was a great night, and because of that, we're now doing it again. We've got another performance on the 10th of October, which happens to be World Mental Health Day. So we're doing the performance on that day. And the Comedy Festival had no idea that their festival fell into the World Mental Health Week.
That's so
we were able to say to them, do you realise that it's a wonderful opportunity on this day, World Mental Health Day, to present some comedy? And it was at that time that participants in Berkshire had, during our project, come up with a lot of comedy and had first suggested that title and where the whole idea of doing a comedy performance had grown up. So this is now coming back again, but taking us back 2 years ago, we had a piece of writing contributed by Laurie, and it was created in writing sessions in a mental health support centre in Slough, and we were talking about drugs, I remember, she wrote the line, "Recovery will dull my mind and leave some of myself behind," and it was that issue of being high and very creative, and in a sense, you know, missing that when it had gone. So this is music by James Ewers and vocals by Amy Barton of the band Amy's Ghost, and this is called Coming Home by Laurie.
This room becomes a prison as I become ill. I know I cannot stay here of my own free will. I get my coat and I take off, not knowing who I'll meet. I'll walk my way to London, down the middle of the street. Creation comes easily with many, but everybody seems to panic. Recovery will dull my mind, my mind, and leave some of myself behind. Days later, when I find myself, I'm in another space, escaping from emotions beyond time or even place. My mind is so excited by things I think I need. My body is so empty and very sad indeed. Creation comes See my island clearly appearing through the black. Today this room is sunny. I'm stable as I can be. Knowing I can stay. I can still be free, still be free.
Another beautiful song there. So if anyone does want a copy of this CD, they can get it from your website, which we'll give at the end.
That's the right, yes.
So something really special and wonderful to talk about now. Do you want to introduce it, say the magic word?
Well, you mean Ho'oponopono?
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you to spell it. I know it's got a couple of apostrophes in there.
Yes, well, I was having trouble in my personal life with somebody about a year ago, and a friend recommended this book called Zero Limits by Joe Vitale, and it's about this Hawaiian kind of teacher, whatever, called Hugh Len.
He's a shaman, isn't he?
Kind of, if they have those in Hawaii. And I was, you know, I got the book. But generally, I would be really cautious about sort of taking a belief system or ideas from Hawaii, which seems so far away from my own culture and background and all that stuff. However, got into the book and loved it, and I really, you know, I just had to accept that everything this bloke, Hugh Len, this mystic was saying, seemed to be absolutely on the mark. Absolutely just great stuff. And it has helped in you know, my dealings with people, but also it's helped in the work with Company Paradiso. And I think when I mentioned earlier about the importance of listening to people, and that idea that you can't change people, it was really important, and as you know, made us look at our sort of work as a charity in a different way. And I think that one of the key things about this system, Ho'oponopono, which I know you've come across yourself a little bit, is that you change yourself. So when this guy, Hugh Len, was in a psychiatric criminal institution in Hawaii, he did not try to affect others. What he did was he listened to people in that institution, and he tried to change himself. And there's certain simple mantras, which are, I love you, forgive me, thank you. What's the other? There's a fourth one. What's the other one?
I'm sorry.
I'm
please,
sorry.
Please forgive me.
So,
thank you. I love you.
Exactly.
Is the way I remember it.
And the combination of those four, or just one, or whatever. But it's basically listening to people while trying to understand them and to sort of transform your own experience. And as you as Hugh Len did this, he describes a situation where things started to change. In other words, other people started to grow, I suppose, as he was trying to grow. And the story is that that transformed the institution, and that not only did some that did the patients sort of shift, but also the staff shifted. And there's wonderful descriptions of being around in the book, descriptions of being around that centre, and Hugh Len would always be smiling and laughing, and he would, you know, they would do baking together and they would play tennis together and all these sorts of things, and that process helped people. I'd avoid the word help. That process sort of filtered out and spread. So that's really important in my work and in the stuff we've been doing recently in it's particularly in Serena Hall, which is this homeless drop-in centre where people really were, you know, coming in with no home and with a lot of issues, sometimes addictions and so on. I was trying to work on this idea of just listening really carefully and in a sense trying to love that. And it was really, it brought up some amazing things.
As I remember the story from the book, after that, the Hugh Len had been there working for a couple of years, so many patients had recovered, the institution actually closed down.
That's what they say, yeah. Apparently it closed down.
Yes. So it's obviously very effective. And yes. And the idea in a nutshell is that everything reflects our consciousness, so that if there's a problem in the outer world, it's reflecting something in us. So we don't need to change the outer world, we just need to heal that part of ourselves.
Exactly, yes.
So all you're ever doing is healing yourself.
Healing yourself, I think that's it, yes, yes.
And there, I know there are Ho'oponopono workshops you can go on where they reveal some secret techniques, and I haven't been on a workshop, so I can't reveal what the secrets are, but all I know is from the book, yeah, just keep repeating those four phrases. I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you.
Exactly, and that's one thing that I particularly like about it, is the simplicity. And I could be wrong, but I imagine those techniques are simply techniques to keep those phrases, to keep that sort of consciousness active, so you don't forget it, to keep it going. Because there's a lovely bit when this Hugh Len says, you know, every day I try to apply my idea, you know, I try to follow these sort of mantras through a whole day, and I never succeed. I think that's really interesting, you know. That's great, but that's what he's striving for, and that's what we can strive for. And there are little things that can help along the way. But I mean, I would never have gone into a sort of soup kitchen environment thinking about love. But as it grew, I was thinking in that way, and I was thinking how important it is, and it's absolutely true. Because as I got to know the staff better and better, one of them said, we have to, you know, people have to have something to look forward to. If they haven't got something to look forward to, they'll go back to what they know. And what they know may be prison or you know, abusive relationships or everything they've come from. So they have to have something, and almost in many cases that something is to do with love. It's to do with family and you know, children in many cases, or partners or whatever. Getting to a place where we are more integrated with those people we used to know. And one of the exercises that we did was to one day bring in cards, just cards, which and envelopes and stamps, and we had a writing session in the corridor, and people were coming through, and we were saying, is there anyone you'd like to write a card to? And we were getting people writing to children, writing to a sister that they hadn't seen for many years, writing to mothers back in Poland, you know. It was so simple, but so effective. And then they were talking about, you know, what they were writing and why they'd done it. So I thought, yeah, you know, it's as simple as that. It's making those connections again and trying to work out what I'm going towards, what I'm living for.
And healing relationships.
Absolutely. Healing those relationships, yes. And I think, you know, again, I just hope that it sort of sticks and lasts. I have gone back there and I will continue to go back, but people, you know, you sort of you come into it, people's lives when their home is for a short time, then they move and you may see them again years later. I'm sure we'll be at Serena Hall again because it was so productive. Yes, the writing in that case was so simple, and it came down to such few words, and so in that context it wasn't appropriate, although we had done some writing sessions upstairs. They hadn't been that well attended. We'd have two or three or four people, which was lovely, but the session in the corridor just seemed to really be the answer, and that really was kind of what was appropriate in the centre, and you know, I was pleased that we sort of came across that.
Thank you. That's a beautiful, beautiful story. There's just time to give out your website if anyone wants to get involved with future writing projects. Is that how they can contact you?
Absolutely, yes. The website is www.companyparadiso.co.uk, and that's company, C-O-M-P-A-N-Y, and then Paradiso is P-A-R-A-D-I-S-O, companyparadiso.co.uk. And we are now involved in this project supporting people who've had issues of mental health of one kind or another, moving forward to a book, which will be printed in about November time, and to this performance at the Brighton Comedy Festival on the 10th of October.
So there's still places on that if people want to.
Oh yes, there's still opportunities to submit writing or to get involved in workshops leading to performance, or to do both, or also to come along and see that event. 6 o'clock on Wednesday the 10th of October.
And they can also get this CD from that website.
They can get the CD from our website, yes, or you know, just send an envelope with a stamp on it, and we'll put a CD in and return it to you. So that's right. We are inviting material, written material under 1,500 words, poetry or prose. We're very happy to look at it, and we'll tell you about groups. We will be doing a group in Brighton that's open and leading up to the performance. And John Hegley will be around for, I think, two of those workshops, as he was last time, which will be great because he's so inspiring.
He is
inspiring, and he is a central figure for Company Paradiso because his poetry, I think, is always clear, which I really like. It's easily performable. It's often funny. And he, you know, he's a great model to follow, I think.
That's a wonderful opportunity.
Yes.
So would you like to introduce your final track?
Yes, the final song. This is a song by Leanne, who was 17 when she wrote this, in a writing session in a pupil referral unit. That's for young people who've been excluded from school. And it's about her mum. And this is music by James Ewers, and vocals again by Amy Barton from the band Amy's Ghost.
Thank you.
I was her sweet princess. Now I see her like this, I just break down. But I always saw a difference.